Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hello, and welcome to an hour of mind power. Well, get on your long johns, mentally anyway, because we are going to be going to one of the coldest places on the planet. We are going to be joining Sue Ursler and listening to her story about being together with the man in her life, her very special fellow, her husband Phil, and how together they were on top of the world. This is the first couple that was able to climb the fabled seven summits. Sue Ursler, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Donna.
I was really amazed. I've interviewed climbers before on my show, and to me, it just is amazing that someone would want to bundle up with all kinds of clothes that makes you look like an oversized polar bear in different colors, and lug all of this equipment and endure weather that probably could create permanent creases in your face for the rest of your life and just love doing it. I look at this and I just go, wow, this is incredible. I don't know that I would want to do it. Tell us how this came about. Now, before you do, let me interrupt you because I want people to know that you are a speaker and you were a former executive at a Fortune 500 company. You're one of the few women ever to complete the seven summits, and you use this for verbal leverage, which I think is wonderful because the visual that goes along with the words, action always speaks louder than just words, but you've got both of them together. Susan, did you ever think that you were going to end up climbing mountains?
No. I started out, actually, I did not meet my husband, Phil, until I was 35 years old. So, and I'm almost ashamed to say, but living in the Northwest, looking at Rainier all my life, I had never even thought about climbing it. And then I met Phil, and he's an international guide, and I started climbing with him.
Well, how in the world did you start? What was your first experience on a mountain? I mean, how did you start this? We have a next-door neighbor who loves to climb, and he's in his 60s at this time, and the last time he decided he was going to go climbing, he had to spend 6 months of preparation to be able to become a part of a group. He went up on Rainier, and they did ice climbing. Night climbing. And he said he never regretted it, but he said, good grief, I don't think I was in as good a shape as I could have been in for it. Tell us how you prepared yourself for this.
Yeah, and when we first did it, my now he's my husband, he was my boyfriend at the time, but I wanted to understand what Phil did for a living because, like you had mentioned, I was always a corporate executive. And I didn't really understand it, and so he asked me if I'd like to climb on Rainier, and I thought, well, why not? Let's give it a shot. And I think what happens is you either love it or you don't. I've talked to so many climbers now, and I happen to go through what many people do. You feel sick from the altitude. It's a lot of work. It's tough. You can have a headache. You can even be sick to your stomach. But after all those hours of climbing through the night and finally the sun comes up in the morning, you stand on the top, to me that outweighed everything. I was hooked. I loved that feeling of accomplishment.
Wow. Now, on May 16, 2002, you and Phil were on top of Mount Everest. And any film I've ever seen regarding Everest and the climbers, to stay up there for just a little bit of time, it's like once you get there, you have to turn around and start heading down the mountain because the weather changes so quickly.
Mm-hmm.
So let's talk a little bit about how you prepared for this, because this is a love story to a degree, talking about you and Phil and how you got together. I mean, anybody would say, well, what is this snazzy, good-looking gal wanting to do with a mountain climber? That, I mean, how in the world did you even find that you had compatibility? What attracted you to each other?
Yeah, you know, when we, it was interesting because when I met Phil, I had this list, especially by age 35, I had a list of what I was looking for in a mate, and I pretty much pitched it. When I met Phil, he was just wonderful, and I really fell in love with him, and so I thought, well, hey, I'm dating a mountain guide. And we just happened to click. Actually, we were introduced by a client. We didn't meet on a mountain, which a lot of people ask us, but we just happened to click and very compatible and just very much enjoy each other's company. So he made it very much of a pleasure to be in the mountains as well. And the only way that I was able to climb with my job, because this was a 10-year journey from the time we climbed that first Rainier climb to standing on the top of Everest, I would need to take a vacation from work and go climb a mountain.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's like anything else. You know, you just start out small and you go higher and higher and bigger and bigger. And that's what would happen. We would go to, we did Kilimanjaro, which was, again, higher than Rainier, but, hey, doable. And so then we took on the next.
Now, let's talk about the seven mountains. There's
mm-hmm.
Mount McKinley,
right.
Which is 20,320 feet. You
mm-hmm.
did that in 95. Mm-hmm. You went to Cerro Aconcagua. Pronounce that for me.
Cerro Aconcagua.
Aconcagua in Argentina,
uh-huh.
22,841 feet. You have Vincent Massif, which is 16,067 feet. That was in 98. Then you had a mountain in Russia, Mount Elbrus,
mm-hmm.
and that's 18,481 feet. You did that in 93.
Mm-hmm.
Mount Kilimanjaro, which Hemingway just loved,
mm-hmm.
in Tanzania, 19,339 in 92. Mount Everest, which we just mentioned, 29,035 feet in 2002. And then the one in Australia, how do you pronounce that one?
Kosciuszko.
Kosciuszko.
Mm-hmm.
That's 7,308.
Mm-hmm.
What an array of mountains and the cultural diversity that you had to experience when you were traveling. Now, one of the things that you mentioned right in the beginning of your book is that in 1999, 7 years after the two of you met, 3 years after you were married, and 6 months after you made the sixth of your seven summits, your husband was hospitalized with cancer.
Yeah.
Tell us what was going on with him.
Well, when Phil was in high school, he was diagnosed with Crohn's disease. It's an autoimmune disease of the GI system.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm finding a lot of people are suffering from that for sure. But he dealt with that all of his adult life, and he actually went on to climb Everest. And the first time in 1984, Phil became the first American up the north side of Everest. And that was very significant for him because he did that while dealing with that disease. Well, over the years, by the time I met him, and we were preparing, actually, to climb Everest, and it was going to be on Millennium Goal in year 2000, Phil was hospitalized because of the Crohn's for another surgery. And he thought he could get through the surgery and we'd be climbing, you know, in the spring of 2000. But he had many complications, and unfortunately they found colon cancer at that time. And he had, again, he had many complications, and that really set us back, even to the tune of he had an IV in his arm for all nutrition for 8 weeks. He couldn't eat or drink anything by mouth, and everything spiraled down. We thought that everything was certainly over for us. We weren't even sure if he'd ever be able to do what he loved for a living again.
Mm-hmm. Well, he did survive it, and he did come out of it. In fact, the two of you are individuals. You say in your book, one of the qualities that you share is the absolute refusal to let anyone or any circumstances tell us that you can't achieve something or you can't work with something.
Exactly.
I know with Phil climbing the mountains, that's the case. Of course, you became involved climbing the mountains. You're weathering elements that can literally undo you. When you're up on a mountain, sometimes your mask won't work, sometimes it will. I mean, you've got all of this equipment, all of this preparation, all of this training. You have to be alert because the weather can shift in a split second. Do you think that this is something you had to cultivate, or do you think that this ability to stand in the face of adversity was something innate in both of you?
Personally, I believe it is something that can be developed because I look at the first part of my life, and yes, I was driven and always had a driving force in me, but I really believe that success builds on success as well. Again, the mountains are a great indicator of that. You know, you climb Rainier, and then you get some confidence. I can go climb Kilimanjaro. You get some more confidence, and it's the skills that you're learning along the way. But certainly, I also believe it very strongly that it comes down to vision as well. And I have, over the years, for myself anyway, developed this in that climbing Everest just proved it to me. If you really have a vision of where you want to go and you can see it very clearly, you can perform it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it might take years. It takes a lot of work and a lot of dedication. But if you're focused on that picture in your mind, you can get there. If you're really committed to it. And that's just, that worked in my career, that worked in climbing mountains, and it's worked in everything I've done since.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think it's a phenomenal example, and perhaps that's why the two of you have such a passion for it, because it does test your mettle.
Mm-hmm.
And then some.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when you went into the country to prepare for Everest.
Mm-hmm.
Let me back up a bit. How did you prepare for Everest? Let me ask you that question, because this is a monumental task.
Mm-hmm.
You have to have a team. You have to get the Sherpas. You have to get everything there. I've been told that the amount of trash that's been left behind by climbers. Give us some detail. The climbers is just amazing. Give us some details about what it takes to prepare for Everest, and what is it that makes Everest unique from the other mountains that you climbed?
Yeah, let me start with the first part of that. As far as what makes Everest different, and it was very different, besides the seven summits, the highest mountain on each continent that you had just described earlier, Donna, we had climbed 30 to 40 climbs as well, different places, Ecuador, Mexico. But all those climbs, I did them while I was on a 2 or 3 week vacation. Everest is so different because it's a couple months on the mountain. You're away from home for just about 3 months. It is a long endeavor. And the main reason why, and you just described it, there's tremendous logistics. You need to get over there. You need to get your team over there. You need to get your food over there. You need to get your team of Sherpas hired. And just, you know, we could go on forever about the logistics. But the other issue is, or the biggest issue of why you need to be there so long is to acclimatize. And you need to actually climb up and down the mountain, not all the way, but keep pushing up higher to acclimatize to a higher level and then come back down and rest and recover and let your body recover and then push higher. So to get ready for this also, and you had asked earlier too about how did I prepare, I wanted to mention as far as working out and such, that was a tremendous endeavor actually was just to get prepared from a physical standpoint and mental, but the physical part of it, the hiking is one of the best things you can do. If somebody wants to climb a mountain, the best thing you can do is go out, climb on the mountains at altitude, climb in the mountains at altitude. Best
mm-hmm.
thing you can do. But I had to mimic things because I worked in an office building in downtown Seattle, so what I would do is take a pack, put it on my back, go into the stairwell, and climb the stairwell at lunch with a weighted pack on my back, 32 flights, 6 or 7 times as fast as I could.
Holy so, Moses, how much weight did you put in the pack?
Oh, it was about 30 pounds, maybe 40 at the max.
Okay, folks, this is what you do to get yourself in shape. Just follow here what Sue has described. Oh, my goodness, I can just imagine myself going back to work, sitting at the desk, panting, someone saying, what did you do? Oh, I just ran up and spun 20 flights of stairs and down 6 or 7 times on lunch hour. Ow! Just listening to that, Sue, makes me pooped. My goodness, your legs had to have muscles of steel in them by the time you did that.
Well, you do need, you know, you certainly need to be strong, and you need to have the aerobic capability, and so you're trying to do whatever you can to mimic what you're going to do, but also squeeze it into your life, because we all have such busy lives, and just to make it a priority to fit it in there somewhere.
Now, you just have a short window of time when you're getting ready to climb Mount Everest. What is it, 2 months? That's available for climbers? How in the world, is there a lottery that's drawn for this? How are you able to qualify for it? What are the standards? What are the requirements? Are there any requirements for climbing Mount Everest?
Well, a lot of people go with guides. I sure did. We sure did. And we recommend that. And the guides will certainly screen climbers to make sure that we have enough of a skill set that we'll all be safe up there, because everybody needs to be safe, not just you, the climber, but your team and the people that you might be endangering if you're not in shape or you're not skilled.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, there's definitely a process for, you know, for screening people on a guided climb, and that's a good thing. And but as far as the two-month window and who goes to the top, once all the teams are over there, then it becomes, everybody again is going through this acclimatization process, climbing up and down the mountain. What is key is that there's only normally a couple days that you can stand on top. And in our case in 2001, when we had to turn around and we didn't make it, there were only 2 days you could stand on the top that entire season. So you have to be ready at the same time. You have to be acclimatized. And there's going to be a few people on the mountain when you're climbing. There's no question.
Amazing. Now, there was a team that had gone up on Everest, and I believe the woman's name was Marty, who fell to her death. And your husband had known Marty for quite a long time, and they had been friends. But Marty, the reason they figured she fell, and she was from Seattle here,
mm-hmm.
and I can remember when that occurred, it was just a shock to so many people here, because she was very experienced as a climber. But apparently altitude had gotten to her. She was not thinking clearly, so she didn't hook herself up properly. This is something you constantly have to be aware of, and a climber's ego has to be enough under control where if they're not doing well, they will not jeopardize the rest of the team, and that's just what you've been talking about.
Yes, and it is something that you're thinking about all the time. I think for myself, I was scared most of the time that we were above the ice fall. And I kind of worried about that. I was like, boy, you know, I didn't let the fear paralyze me. But I think it was good in that I think maybe one of the worst things is if you became complacent.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe if you've climbed it many times or whatever, and you feel like, boy, you know, nothing's ever happened to me. But I did not feel that way. I was really quite careful in that if we were clipped in, I'd be clipped in twice
mm-hmm.
because of some of that fear. And I think some fear is a good thing when you're in a dangerous situation.
Oh, I agree. I mean, you can have those wind fronts, the weather shift on you on Everest so fast. And living in the Northwest as I do, as you do, I mean, heavens, you can have sunshine, and in the next 30 seconds, all of a sudden, you've got a hurricane-level wind that's coming in, which is something they're predicting for our local area, Yahoo, in just a little bit. But if you're up on a mountain, it's magnified sometimes 10,000 times.
Yeah, and that's one thing, again, I've had wonderful experience because I live with my guide. Bill's an international guide, has been for 30 years, and one of the first things I learned from him when we were climbing Rainier is, we will turn around at any point if it's not right. There's no way that a mountain is worth going to the top at all costs. You know, it'll always be there. You can always go back. And I lived with that. That was our motto. Now, believe me, we do climb mountains to try to summit. And we'll admit that, because you do.
Sure.
But you don't do it at all costs. If it's, you know, if it's not right, you turn around. And that's been the way I was brought up in the mountains.
Right. And That goes along with one of the things that you talk about in your book, that you say, stick to your vision, never give up, and you'll succeed. I mean, there are times we have to turn away from things because, for whatever reason, it's not going to work.
Mm-hmm.
There can be all kinds of circumstances that run interference.
Right, right.
You don't give up the dream, you don't give up the desire, and maybe you just have to find another angle.
Yeah.
But you keep that in front of you. And I think that's a very good illustration, because sometimes it's appropriate to back away from something.
Absolutely, absolutely. And certainly we did actually have a great example of that, in that we had to turn around in 2001 very close to the summit. We'd been on the mountain for 64 days, and we had one morning left. And we're climbing, and there's just a major storm that particular morning. And it's so cold. It's just biting cold, because the jet stream, the wind blows snow at you all morning long. And 2:30 in the morning, and it's just quite nippy.
Mm-hmm.
But we did turn around that particular morning, 1,400 feet from the summit, and it was the right decision that we made for us. But it wasn't over. We went back the following year, and in year 2002 is when we climbed it. So I agree with you. It's like you don't stop going after your dream. You might be temporarily set back, but, boy, we're going to go after it again as long as we can do it safely.
You've had friends who, as climbers, have died on the mountain or have become ill, you know, critically ill because of the experience. And there's a beautiful poem that is written by Chris Hoyman. Now, he was 16 years old when he wrote this, and this was used on the inside of the memorial program, and I just loved it. He said, "My choice." He was 16 years old when he wrote this, which I just think is amazing. He said, "I chose the hard life, one of toil and strife, but I loved every minute for sure. I loved the tall cliffs and the bottomless drift because I found life's only cure. I found that hard work is where success lurks and that sweat is my special path. It's the river that flows to where I will go, and, well, a few might laugh. But I know it's true because I found a clue on the bounds of what some call insane. I call this place home, and it's where I'll roam until he comes and smothers my flame. Until that sad day, all I can say is that I love the man I became," by Chris Hoyman, age 16. This is a man who was out there climbing mountains.
Isn't that something?
At 16, he wrote this, and his life was a love affair with mountains.
Yeah.
What a statement.
Yeah. Yeah. He was doing what he loved.
Yes, he was.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that that's something else that you say. When you're doing something that you love, you're willing to weather whatever comes your way, because you love it so much that you're willing to make the commitment, the dedication, going that extra step, or being able to retreat when you need to, and moving on. Your stories are just in here about yourself, about your husband. Another mountain is K2. We have a friend whose son has climbed K2, and you call it the Savage Mountain. What is it that makes it more savage than Everest?
Well, and I'll have to admit, I have not been on K2, but my understanding is it's definitely quite a technical mountain, and also the weather can be quite severe on K2.
What would you say to someone in life if they were wanting to explore climbing?
A couple of things. One is it's an incredible sport. There's no question. You mentioned it earlier too, Donna. One thing that it's such a reward is, if you do go off to climb the Seven Summits or anywhere in the world, you do get to explore and see the world. It's just a great excuse to get out there and see the world, parts that you probably wouldn't go as a tourist, and really get very close to the locals. And then, plus, you have the accomplishment of standing on the top of the mountain. But I would say it's a fabulous thing to go after. And as far as getting prepared to do that, is to start small. You know, if you live in the Northwest, boy, we have hiking everywhere.
That's the truth.
And hiking What I do personally these days, especially, is I hike twice a week. And if I hike twice a week without fail, I can normally climb just about anything, Rainier or above, with picking up my workout a little bit. But and then the other thing I'd really like to suggest as well, because whether it's climbing or any kind of big dream, is just to, I use three words, project, prepare, and persevere. You know, project as far as project your future. Have a real clear vision of where you're going. Just decide what it is. See yourself on top. Put a plan together and then persevere, because we're probably going to get knocked back down, especially on big mountains. You know, it's not always going to be our day.
Mm-hmm.
But just to always go back.
With your being the first couple, man, wife, team to do this, you've achieved some wonderful things that other couples have not achieved, much less single individuals. What's your next big one that you're wanting to do? Is there another big one? Are you still climbing?
Well, I do try to climb at least once a year with Phil. Phil is still climbing, and it is amazing, too. One thing that we didn't mention, but he was also, after we did successfully climb Everest, he was diagnosed with prostate cancer, and that sent us back to the hospital. But he is 58 years old right now, and he is still out there guiding strong. He climbs all over the world. And so I love it. We were just up on Muir this last Friday, climbing up to Muir on Rainier. But as far as bigger climbs, I try to go once a year. We go on treks around the world and those types of climbs. And then, of course, I do a lot of speaking around the world, and that's my love.
Mm-hmm.
And then also, when we walked away from Everest the last time, I really wanted to give back to the Sherpas. They are absolutely incredible. They're the reason that we can have so much success on Everest. And so every time I do present, I do contribute to the American Himalayan Foundation, which is a organization that has a specific group that sponsors girls that can go to school, and we're up to 6,000 girls now that are staying in school that otherwise wouldn't have a chance.
Oh, how fabulous!
Yeah, that's
is wonderful.
That makes it working worth it.
Well, I agree. And the Sherpas, if anybody wanted to do research on them as a people, they are so hardy, and they have such a savvy about the mountains. To them, the mountains are living, breathing entities. Correct me if I'm wrong, but that is what I understand with them. And they have a feel that is just incredible.
Yeah.
And they've saved the lives of so many people through the years because of their savvy.
Yeah. They're wonderful, wonderful people. Are just salt of the earth, really. The Sherpas were just so much a part of our team.
Mm-hmm.
Without a doubt.
Well, now, Sue, you have a website that people can go to. They can go Together on Top, mm-hmm. togetherontop.com, to find out more of this. If any of you have kids that would love to go hiking, or maybe you decide you'd like to try out for some adventures, then by golly, you need to check out these websites. You can also go to SusanEschler.com, and her last name is spelled E-R-S-H-L-E-R. Her husband's name is Phil. He leads groups around the world, so he's very experienced, and he's off doing his wild and wonderful things. So if you want to experience an adventure of the two people, that I say ventures, I should use the plural, you're not going to want to miss this book. Together on Top of the World, it's their phenomenal story of how they were able to climb fabled seven summits. Plus, you know, she's mentioned a lot of others as well. But to be able to accomplish this as a couple is just absolutely amazing. Susan, I want to thank you for being my guest today.
Thank you, Donna. It was such a pleasure.
It was a delight having you. And I wish you many, many more climbs. My goodness. Just seeing you running up and down those stairwells with a black back plaque on, like you're 32-something pounds, I go, oh, my goodness. I think that is awesome. You have a wonderful life, and keep on moving, because you've got a great story to share. Thanks so much.
Thank you so much.
This is Donna Sebo. Hey, we're taking a break. We're going to be back in just a little bit. Don't go away. More good things to share. We'll be right back.
Donna Sebo publishes a popular, inspirational, and insightful newsletter filled with information about her upcoming guests, her travel schedule, seminar presentations, and upbeat articles to lighten up your life. You can subscribe to this free monthly newsletter by emailing her at donna@delphiinternational.com. That's donna@delphiinternational.com. You can also go to her website, www.delphiinternational.com, and review past publications. Keep in touch with Donna through this monthly publication. Again, her email address is donna@delphiinternational.com, and her website is www.delphiinternational.com.
Are you concerned about nutrition? Do you work hard to eat right, try to feed yourself and your family nutritious food? Well, you'll want to know about glyconutrients. What are they? These are sugars that are present in nature, however, we're not getting them in our food anymore. Scientific study is proving that these sugars are necessary for all cellular and immune system function. Over 20,000 studies are conducted each year on glycoforms alone. These are the sugar protein structure that line each and every cell of the body. 4 out of the last 8 Nobel Prizes in physiology have been awarded for research in the area of cellular communication and how these sugars work in the body. This is Donna Sebo. Every day I bring to you information that will empower and light up your life. I would like to invite you to visit my website, DelphiInternational.com, and find out more about these glyconutrients. That's DelphiInternational.com. Go to my website, go to the left side of the screen, tap on the button that says glyconutrients. MIT's Technology Review, February 2003, states that glycomics is one of the 10 emerging technologies that will change the world. Education is the key to advancement of understanding and making our lives better. Visit my site, DelphiInternational.com. Go to the left side of the screen and tap on the button that says glyconutrients. I know it'll make a difference for you, as it has for me.
Hi, this is Donna Sebo. Telephone lines are now open. I'd be delighted to light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight. Here is the toll-free number that you can call into if you'd like to chat with me. It's 888-815-9756. That's 888-815-9756. Also, we have a direct line of 530-876-9916. That's 530-876-9916. So give me a buzz if you'd like to chat. All I need is your first name or your initial, and then what I will do, I'll share with you what I perceive about you or circumstances about you in your life, and then you're welcome to ask me a question when I finish about anything that's of importance to you. Doesn't make any difference. There's no such thing as a stupid question. So again, give me a buzz if you'd like to chat, 888-815-9756 or 530-876-9916. And I must apologize for those of you who have been waiting for my newsletter. I regret I wasn't able to get it out on the 1st. I'm hoping I'm going to be able to finish it today. We had a series of emergencies that came up, so I have just not gotten it out on time. So it will be coming out shortly, though. And when it does, you'll see a listing of guests, and there's going to be all kinds of good things there. So anyway, I want to apologize to you because it didn't get out on time, on my deadline that I always like to do on the 1st of the month. But it is coming. Donna Sebo here, and I want to share with you a story about a woman that I just think is incredibly resourceful. I'm always amazed at how people will come up with concepts and ideas, and when you hear about them, you go, wow, that's pretty cool. Makes sense to me. I wonder why nobody thought of doing it before. Well, sometimes people do, but a woman by the name of Nalani Lavadur, she decided that there needed to be something done with items that were unsold from her own church's garage sale. But she, you know, she said, once I got rid of them at the Refugee Services, which was a special program with the Minnesota Council of Churches, she said, you know, I'm taking all of this stuff and giving it to these people. How can I help more families by rounding up other unsold items from all the other sales in my local area? Now think about this. Any of us that have ever done garage sales or, you know, what we do, usually it's around the holiday season in our neighborhood, there are all kinds of special events that are raising money for organizations and people contribute their items, and you often can just really make, you know, a wonderful amount of money. Well, bazaars, that's the word I've been looking for. Now, this lady, a mature woman, she has always loved volunteering for different projects, but this is one she designed herself. What she does, she regularly goes to garage sales, church bazaars, and all other kinds of activities. And she said they are like a gold mine because they'll have all of this material left over. And she will hand out flyers to these different groups. She just hands them out and says, would you like to donate the items that you have left over so you don't have to stockpile them or give them back to people? Just donate them to this cause. And she also sells less essential items like waffle irons on eBay, and she uses the cash to buy necessities like detergent. She'll go to the local dollar store with whatever she's got, and she'll find all kinds of things. And she noticed that there was a bank in her local area that was offering the use of a moving truck to new clients. Guess what she arranged to do? Yep, she went to the bank, and she managed to borrow it during the off hours to move furniture that people were willing to donate. She's hired refugees to help with the moving to gain work experience, and she's taken them to thrift stores to buy clothes, showing them how they can be dressed well, and they don't have to spend a whole bunch of money. And she said, this store that I take them to offers a senior discount, so they get the special discount on Tuesdays. There's just all of these people that are working with her because they say, we need to move the stuff. Now, she also has helped with the welcome kits that the Minnesota Council of Churches provides for each family. She's reorganized their supply room, and she stands couches on end that are going to end up being given away to make a free space. She does anything from stacking towels, putting together dish sets. The staff that has worked with her have assisted 1,500 people who have fled persecution in countries from Myanmar, Iraq, Ethiopia, and Sudan. And she said they didn't have time to worry about the state of the donations or the increasing need for more. She said, I started doing this so that the caseworkers that were working so hard could spend more time with the clients they were wanting to help. Now, this is a lady, she's rather unique. She has been a professional machinist for 27 years, and she said, I just absolutely love doing this. She likes coming up with new ideas, new ways of making things happen. And I think she's just a great inspiration for anybody that is willing to hear her story. Why? Because she said, it's just something I want to do. And, you know, we were talking with Sue earlier. Sue is a mountain climber, but the very thing that she said is that you keep on going. Sometimes you have setbacks, but you do look at what it is that you want to go for. And you realize that you have this marvelous opportunity to be out here in life and to do what maybe is very special for you. I know of some people, there are women, they'll knit socks, or they will make Afghans, or they will do something. And here is this wonderful lady, Nalani Levadu, and I want to say hats off to you, because you are doing something that not only brings you pleasure, but it's making a difference in other people's lives. And she varies what she does. She's not stuck in a particular rut that she might find boring. She said, I like the challenges. And I just think that's awesome. I really, really do. So I encourage you to be aware that other people, when you hear their story, love for art and you wanted to supply youngsters or women that have been abused or men that have been abused, you know, people that maybe need to be aware of their own artistic style and self, how could you help them out? What are if you were in a corporate positioning and you wanted to help train young people to be able to enter into this changing environment and be able to understand how to work well within it, mentor someone? There are so many different options. Who knows? You may become another Mrs. Fields designing a better chocolate chip cookie. I don't know. But whatever it is that you would choose to be involved with, it's always so important to remember that if your heart is involved and you have a passion for it and it brings you joy, you are making and creating an effect that is going to have an unbelievable ripple in life, and you just don't know what and who is going to touch or when or where. And all of this is so very, very significant. So I wanted to share Nalani's story with you because I think it's a very good one, and there are so many good people in this world doing a lot of nice things. So whenever you're listening and you hear about all the crap that's going on, which I guarantee you if you look hard enough, you can find the negative, and if you look hard enough, you can also find the positive. So it's up to you. What are you going to do with your mind? What are you going to put into your head? That's your choice. You make your decision. If you believe that this world is ugly and bad and it's going to go down the tube, then I guarantee you the world is going to show you that faith. But if you also look at the world as something that is good, that there are those ugly situations we can encounter, but how you're going to use them and how you're going to make them turn around for you and make your life better, you create a script of your own making. They can be an example for others. So have faith in yourself. Oh, by the way, I thought I'd share with you something I came across. They said 10 of the most irritating phrases in English, this is what they are. At the end of the day, fairly unique. I personally, at this moment in time, with all due respect, absolutely, it's a nightmare. Shouldn't have. 24/7. It's not rocket science. I wonder why they considered those 10 the most irritating. I could think of a few others. Oh, well. Won't spend much time going there. This is Donna Siebel. Hey, if you'd like to give me a buzz, I'd be delighted to light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight. Here are the telephone numbers to call into worldwide, toll free. Is 888-815-9756. That's 888-815-9756 or 530-876-9916. Hello, we've got a caller. Welcome to the show.
Hello, Ms. Tebow.
First name or initial, and where are you calling from?
This is Lyle from Indianapolis.
Hi, Lyle.
How are you doing?
Yeah, I'm doing wonderfully. Is it starting to shine, the sun over there?
No, it's cloudy over here, but I was able to cut the grass, so it was okay. It didn't rain.
Oh, my goodness, the little things in life that we're so grateful for. I don't ever get excited about cutting grass, but I guess you can.
Well, it had to be done, so.
Ah, yes. Now, Lyle, we're getting ready to go on break. Will you stay online?
I surely will.
Okay, we're going to be coming back and chatting with Lyle. Hey, if you want to talk to me, write this number down, 888-815-9756, because I'll be able to talk with you too. Lyle, we're going to come back and pick you up in just a moment and chat, but right now at this moment, we're going to be taking a break, and when we come back, we'll share more with you right here on the Donna Siebel Show. Don't go away.
Do you want to lose weight? Do you deal with diabetes, high blood pressure, osteoporosis, or chronic pain? Do you want to know one of Dr. Perricone's 7 secrets to beauty, health, and longevity? Do you have 15 minutes a day to look and feel better? Then let me introduce you to DTAP, the workout that works. For the beginner or expert exerciser, learn from physical training specialist Teresa Tapp how, in just 15 minutes a day, you can burn fat and sugar, build strong bones and muscles, and lose inches fast with no equipment or jumping. visit the TTAP website, TTAP.com, or call 1-800-342-0717 to learn how. That's T-TAPP.com. We'll help you lose inches, look good, and feel fabulous at TTAP. 1-800-342-0717. TTAP.com.
Enter the magical world of God's kiss.
Johnny finds himself at the entrance to a large open valley, framed by high mountains rich in the brown red colors of the earth. He stands in awe, even a little fearful of the mountain's great size. After all, he's just a little boy and not very tall.
God's Kiss is a beautifully illustrated children's book about a young boy's journey into a valley with children and animals from all over the world. They are gathering together to experience the wonder of love and beauty that will affect their lives forever. A talking book audio narrated by the author Donna Sebo accompanies this wonderful storybook, creating a special magic all of its own. This book package makes a wonderful gift for those special children in your life ages 3 to 10. God's Kiss book and talking book audio are only $19.95 plus shipping and handling, and the author Donna Sebo will autograph and personalize your book if you request it. Call 800-872-8852. You can also order through Donna Sebo's website, www.delphiinternational.com. That 800 number again, 872-8852.
As a counselor, Donna Sebo is available for private consultations by appointment. These can be done by telephone or in person. If you'd like to schedule an appointment with Donna, call 253-582-5604 or 800-872-8852. That's 253-582-5604 or outside of Pierce County, 800-872-8852.
Hi, this is Donna Sebo. And we're going to be going to the phone line, show you how it's done if you've never done it before. Lyle, are you still with me?
Yes, I am.
All right, sir. First thing that I am getting for you is your patience is paying off. Also, you're going to find you've got a couple of friends that are going to be in what I would describe as dire circumstances. And that's never fun when you find out about people, you know, really going through difficult times and maybe they haven't said anything about it. Well, you need to know that these circumstances, they're going to have a lot of help to get out of them. And don't try to do it yourself. What you need to do is to try to reach out and incorporate as many different persons with questions about what are the options for these individuals. And they will actually have as many as 4 different options to work with. And then you need to let it go. You have to turn it over to them and say you make the choices. And what they may choose may not be something that would be your option, but you will have done a great deal just to give them the opportunity for choice. And again, the option is theirs. There is a patterning of being very self-critical that I'm seeing you going through. And I want to say set a timer and really do a rip-roaring job with it for about 5 minutes and then say, okay, that's enough of that. Then move on. Don't beat yourself up, because if you beat yourself up over why something doesn't work or why you have not been getting things done in a certain amount of time, you're going to lose your momentum. You're going to get really stuck in the quagmire of your own negative thinking. So you need to be mindfully present and not do that to yourself. You need to be aware that that is a snare, and you don't want to get stuck in that snare because it's going to take a lot of effort to get out of it. So just be aware that when you find yourself into that kind of a patterning, try to have a couple of triggers, like maybe walking around the block, or maybe you paint the bathroom, or you scrub a floor, or you go out and do 500 jumping jacks. Do something physically that is going to allow you to make a shift. And you do that, and you'll find that you'll be back on track really, really fast. And do follow through with your schooling. There's some additional schooling that's coming up. Actually, it's not going to be very expensive. But go for it, because it's showing you how to think differently, and it's showing you how to work differently. What question would you like to ask me, Lyle?
Well, the question, and I wanted to say, you're spot on with what you said. You know, I need to move forward on a couple items, and I feel myself, I know what I have to do, but I feel myself getting stuck because I don't know if I don't want to do it or what it is, but basically you hit it on the head. So I'll take your advice and try to work through it. The question I have for you is, last night or a couple nights ago, I had a dream that, I was getting fired from the current job that I was in. And I don't know if it was real or not. And I want to know from you, do you feel that I'll be working where I'm working now in a year from now?
No. I think you're going to be making a change. But let me say this to you. You need to realize that your dream was showing you, in part, your fear. And one of the things that's very difficult when we are working for a living, which all of us do, is the fear, especially when we're in times like today, where we are being told about how many thousands of people are being laid off. I would like for you to start feeding your mind with the awareness that, worst case scenario, if you did get laid off from your job, that this would give you an opportunity to step into a new arena. And I think part of what's going on in your mind, and your dream is showing it, is that your paradigms about what your life should be are shifting and they're changing. And that's always hard to go through because we like to think, due to indoctrination that we receive from many different factors in our lives, that life is supposed to be absolutely secure and safe, and if we do everything according to whatever book is the quote of the moment, then we're going to be just fine. If you watch Mother Nature, you find there's absolutely no guarantee. You do what you can in a moment, and you have the position of preparation, not unlike what Sue says when you're getting ready to climb a mountain. You have to prepare. You just don't do it. You have to realize that your body, your mind, your spirit, your emotions have to be harmonized. It is work. It is effort. And life hits sometimes, but you're going to be able to move forward. I think that the environment you're working in is going through a lot of big-time change. The fact that this change is happening now, it's a little bit behind in time. It should have happened about a year and a half ago. So it's a real tough situation for management, but I don't want you to be afraid of what's evolving. I think you're going to leave the job on your own. I think you're going to find something else that you want to put your energy into, and that's what you're going to do. But I want you to try to understand, to keep your head, your thinking, in the proper modality so that you don't come from a positioning of fearfulness, so that you come from a positioning of personal strength and awareness that should you need to change, that you look at it as a blessing, not as something that's working against you, so that you can move forward. Am I making sense?
Yeah, you know, I've often had that, you know, I've been able to look back at things, and I said, well, I left some jobs because, you know, things weren't going right, and then later on, things happened. And I see that it was a blessing that I left at the time that I left.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it wasn't a forced leave. I left on my own volition. And then the company went through some problems.
Mm-hmm.
So, and it was in the auto industry. So, I see, you know, so I've been able to look, you know, I thank Jesus that he has given me the ability to see that every change that happens is not negative.
Right. Lyle, I have to tell you, I've got to go. I'm out of time.
All right. Well, thank you very much.
Well, I appreciate your call. You have a wonderful, wonderful evening, and thank you for being with me on the show.
You too. Thank you.
This is Donna Siebel. My goodness, the hour just flew by. Thank you so much for joining me. Remember, always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. We'll be right here, same time, same place, talking tomorrow about how you can get noticed and get referrals. This is Donna. God bless. Be well. Remember, you're always a master of your fate, the captain of your soul. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.